Welcome, everyone. This is Dr. Will Tuttle, and it's Thursday, October 16th, 2025. And I'm delighted that we can all be together and that you're joining us. And this is our monthly third Thursday World Peace Diet Circle call. Great to see you all. Hi, Kathy. Great to see you also, everyone. April again, and Gino and Chrissy, everybody. So, oh, people are just pouring in here at the last minute. So what we'll do is we'll go ahead and get started, and we'll start with a short meditation, and then we'll go ahead and dive into whatever questions and issues we're enjoying talking about this evening. So I'll go ahead and get started, and thank you, Lisa, for being the co-host and letting people in. So... Gosh, it's a gorgeous day. We just had rain, and now it's sunny, and all the plants are delighted, and all the creatures, really, they're all clapping their hands and celebrating. So it's really a beautiful day here in Northern California. Okay, we'll go ahead and begin our meditation time. Get comfortable, everyone, and here we go. Taking a moment now to feel our connection with the earth through the soles of our feet. With every exhalation, allowing ourselves to relax more deeply into this moment. Breathing into the earth and from the earth. The earth representing the infinite, nurturing power that supports all life, the infinite love, and shines at the core of the being. In the earth and all that the earth represents. Exhaling, letting go, and with every inhalation, now we draw forth from heaven. Inspiration, connecting with every breath with heaven, the infinite creative power. Source of all life, shining the very heart of the universe, shining in every cell of our being, feeling ourselves now poised in perfect harmony between heaven and earth. Infinite creative power, infinite nurturing power, and seeing the light flowing up through the soles of our feet, the white light flowing down through the top of our head, meeting in the middle, meeting in our heart, swirling together, sending out sparks of a, like a brilliant sparkler into every cell of our being, bringing healing and peace and freedom, joy, abundance, creativity, and radiating from our being out into the infinite web of relations. Abiding in our true home, in infinite eternal consciousness, knowing that one life shines through all manifestations, and that every one of us, every manifestation, every human being, every animal, every living being in every dimension is awakening to this truth. And we see the animals of the earth now, all the birds from the air, all the marine animals of the waters, all the land animals celebrating their lives in freedom and joy, completely free of human exploitation and interference. See the whole human family celebrating the freedom of a life based on the truth of ahimsa, kindness, abundance, compassion, harmony, gratitude for every day that we have, giving thanks, knowing that we are part of the awakening of this reality, the fulfillment of our destiny, the great adventure, creative awakening, is our true nature. And so we take a few minutes now to just begin to close our meditation with the four Viharas. So with every inhalation, we engender in our heart the feeling of love for all living beings, benevolence and goodwill. And with every exhalation, we radiate loving kindness in all directions, breathing and radiating love. Excluding no one. Like the sun shining on the just and the unjust. Wishing happiness for all living beings. Abiding in our true home of loving kindness. With every inhalation now, we engender in our heart the feeling and the awareness of compassion, the yearning that all beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering, and the willingness and yearning to act to help them, to help relieve their suffering. With every exhalation, just radiating compassion in all directions, filling the whole world with the light and with the truth, infinite compassion, compassion encircling the earth for all living beings everywhere. Abiding in our true home of compassion, with every inhalation now we engender in our heart the feeling of joy, the joy of our true nature that needs no reasons, the joy of being. Joy of springtime and of autumn, of the beauty of life, the transiency of appearances. Complete non-transiency of our true nature. Abiding in joy and allowing this feeling of joy to overflow from our heart in ever-expanding spheres of light, filling the whole world with joy. Abiding in our true home. Abiding in joy. And now finally, with every inhalation, we engender in our heart the feeling of peace. Harmony. Abiding in our true home. At peace. Whatever happens in the outer world, we are at peace, understanding our true nature as eternal consciousness that was never born. And with every exhalation, we radiate peace and harmony out into the infinite web of all living beings. Of the past, present, and future. We see the whole earth now bathed in the light of peace. Abiding in our true home of peace. Love. compassion. Joy and peace flowing through every moment. And so it is. Giving thanks, knowing that as we, each one of us, go forth into our lives, every moment of every day, we are ripening the wisdom of our true nature, the compassion and loving kindness and joy, the peace and creativity, for the benefit of all beings. Presence of the eternal spirit of truth and love, we give thanks knowing this is so. Thank you, everyone, for joining us in our meditation time. Thank you, Yuma. I just love this piano, I have to say. So, and thank you, Madeline. She's here. There she is, coming to say hello to everybody. You want to say hi? Yeah, she's right here.
Hello.
Yay. All right, yeah, we've had a busy afternoon here, all kinds of things happening in our world. So, and I'm sure that's true for everybody. Let's go ahead and open it up for our discussion time. So this is, as you know, our World Peace Diet Circle, and it's closed just for us crazy spiritual vegan type people who have gone through the training or who have expressed an interest and are part of our circle. So it's a great opportunity to share any insights, any concerns, any worries, anything that you feel is just apropos to our mission of spreading the good word of compassion for all beings, and any issues that come up around that, and anything is open really as far as politics or spirituality, whatever. So, Gino, it's so good to see you again, and what is on your heart right now?
Hi, Will. I had a couple of things. I wanted to speak about an item, and then I also had an announcement to make right after that, which will be a lot more brief. I missed the first Thursday, and so I don't know if you discussed this at all, but I wanted to say something about your conversation with Silas Rao. Last one. I saw the first one as well, and I thought you did really well, and I wanted to support you and how that went. The opening statement was by Silesh, and he came off as very ahimsa, very peaceful, very nice guy, you know, said some scientific things, etc. And then your time came, and your response was very respectful and ahimsa as well. And then you went on, for the reason that we were there, to explain things as to, you know, how you see things related to climate change, and made it very clear that, yes, climate change is happening, but it's not being caused by humans. You also mentioned something about, you know, we don't know what's causing it. You know, it can be the sun, it can be this and that and this and that. Silesh, though, throughout all of that, when he was talking, seem to be coming from a very egotistical point of view, because you were telling people on, you know, learning these facts, studying, being open to it and everything. And it was almost like he was taking it in as you were telling him he's not open-minded and this, right?
Right.
Meanwhile, I'm watching Claire Mann's facial expressions, because I love Claire, and it was evident what she was thinking. This is not going the way I want it to. So, I was disappointed in Silesh. I think he shut down, where I think you were very informative, and I really appreciated it and learned some things from you during this. And one of the main statements you made is, you know, basically that you're not a lone rebel, that you've got, what, 2,900 scientists or something behind you, which he never acknowledged. And I says, hey, that's quite a backing you got there. So, I just didn't see it coming off really well for him. And, you know, I didn't want anybody to be a loser kind of thing, but I don't think he represented well. Personally, I don't think this is just my opinion. I don't think it's going to do any good to have another discussion with him, because I don't think anything is going to change. When you bring in Ahimsa and then you bring in ego, no, you're not going to go anywhere. So that was the first thing I wanted to say. My announcement will come right after if you have any comments on what I just said.
Okay, well, I appreciate that. And we probably won't do any more of these. I'm not sure. We, you know, after it was over, the four of us had a discussion, Silesh and myself and Claire Mann and Peter, who's kind of runs that program. And we talked about it, and Claire said, well, we've got these 80 questions. You know, we never even got to most of them that people have, and it'd be nice to maybe do another one. And we said, well, what are the 80 questions? I'll get back to you and I'll let you know what they are. And then we never heard what those were. So I'm not really sure what the 80 questions were that people had. But there were, you know, she seemed to think there's quite a lot of interest. And then afterward, there were various things that took place that were kind of interesting. I mean, I'll just say, you know, briefly, I had said during our exchange in the Q&A, I had said that some of the things that people who are in, you know, climate alarmists are doing are really not in our best interest, for sure. For example, Bill Gates is funding a project to cut down trees in 75 million acres of forest in the western United States, which is pretty fragile, and then bury them, dig big holes and bury them, because these trees are either going to burn, in which case they would release all that carbon and cause more climate change, or they will just die and decay, and they'll release the carbon that way. So either way, these trees are an enemy, and we've got to bury them in oxygen-proof chambers so they don't ever decay. And so he immediately said, no, that's not true. That's not true. And so I said, well, I can send you a link to the article. And then so then afterwards, I sent him a link. I sent to him and to Peter and Claire, the three of them, I sent them a link to the article that tells all about it. And I thought, you know, and Claire said, yeah, we'll just put this in with the resources for the session. And then he sent an email saying, well, I don't think the article is necessarily true, because if you go to the website of the company that says they're going to do this, that's, you know, that's making this proposal, it doesn't say anything about it there. And I said, well, it might not be on the website, but this is what they're planning on doing. And then he sent another a link to another article. He said, well, now I fact-checked it, and I found out that it's not true. And he sent me a link to this Associated Press fact-checker who had this article saying that the reports that Bill Gates is funding a project to cut down trees and bury them isn't totally true. That was kind of the headline. And so I thought, okay, I want to see what this article actually says, because I know, see, I was born and raised in the newspapers. I know even back in the 1970s when I was with my father's newspaper, he used to say, you know, don't trust the Associated Press. Don't, you know, these, all they do is they take their news wires that basically do say whatever the corporations want. That was way back then. It's even worse now. But anyway, I read through this article by this fact checker, and it was like so ridiculous. And in fact, in the article by the fact checker, he actually quotes people saying that they are going to cut down trees in 75 million acres, and they are going to ship them over to Nevada, and they are going to dig, and there's this company, Yale something or other, that's going to bury these trees. I mean, it says it right there. They're planning on doing it. I mean, they're looking for funding, and they're hoping the government will support them and so forth. But that's the project they're trying to do. So I sent an email to everybody saying, look, here, this is, he even says it right in the so-called fact-checking that they are doing it. They are planning. They're working on it. They're trying to get the funding. They want the government to support them. And, of course, I think Biden would have. I don't think Trump would. But, you know, that. So, anyway. So, but the whole thing, I thought, you know, doesn't Silas have any media savvy at all? I mean, can't he see that using the AP to fact-check something and believing that? And because the AP said there are websites that are known to spread misinformation that may be reporting this. And I'm thinking, are you kidding me? I mean, who's spreading the misinformation around here? So it was this typical kind of a thing. And that kind of, for me, it kind of sealed it a little bit. I thought, you know, we're coming from total different worlds. You know, he sort of believes in the whole mainstream media, and he says he doesn't, but that was kind of an obvious example. So I just think we in our movement need to just be more savvy, because we know that we can't really trust the mainstream media when it comes to vegan issues very often. They're reporting how dairy is good for your bones and all these other things. So we should have learned by now not to just go along with whatever they say. And so I appreciate your comments about the whole thing. And I think that's part of the problem, is that, you know, he and a lot of people too, not just him, but he especially, because his whole thing is climate healers, and that's his brand. So it's, I think, personally threatening. But a lot of people in the vegan movement are wedded to this idea of go vegan for the climate as a rallying cry. And it's almost like I'm being, I should be excommunicated for questioning this fundamental faith-based approach. Because like I said, there's so many other great reasons to go vegan environmentally. And the other thing is that we're coming out of the little ice age. It's been getting warmer for the last 150 years, and it's just getting gradually warmer. It's still doing it. It's actually been happening for about 350 years, but, you know, well before the Industrial Revolution. And that was a very cold time. And anyway, there's so many other things about it. So I think sooner or later we're going to have to wake up about this. And that's what I said to him privately. I said, you know, in the long run, it's not a good idea to hitch your wagon to a star that is probably going to fall. And this alarmism, I think the longer I'm in the movement, the more I'm kind of suspicious of alarmism. This like, you know, because his whole thing also was, you know, a vegan world by 2026, because I guess somebody, I think it was the World Wildlife Fund or somebody, said that by 2026 all animals will be dead. You know, all wildlife will be gone. It was like, if we don't go vegan. That was back like 10 years ago in 2016. So, I mean, here we are. That hasn't happened. And this alarmism, it makes the vegan movement look more and more silly, I think. And that's what I don't like. Like, people go, oh, yeah, they're like, we keep crying wolf. But we should focus on things that are really for sure true, and not things that are so divisive. That's what I try to point out. But I've taken a lot, you know, I still take a lot of flack for it, unfortunately. So, I appreciate your comments, so thanks. And I don't want to say too much more. So what is your, if you have any response to that, and then tell us your announcement. Thanks.
So I'll just go to the announcement. So it's something personal. And my mom is very close to 95 years old now.
Really?
She lives, she lives in Newport Richey.
Wow.
And she's not well. And so she's been very unwell, more than usual, for the last month. And at this point, she is bedridden. She can't walk, which is different. And so she is right now around 50-50 on living or not. And so I have my two sisters back there really taking care of things. And my mom and I had been very close for a long time, and she was a single mother until I was about 7. I remember clearly those days and all the things that happened back then. But so she's a very important person to me. So it is possible that she could pass, you know, in one day or maybe 2 months. We just don't know. So it is possible if she passes, you know, before our next meeting or something, that I'm not going to be around for a while, because I don't really know how I'm going to take this. I do know I'm much more mature about people that pass away, and I have various reasons for that. And, you know, I lost someone very close to me already this year. So it is possible that, you know, I may not be around. I don't know how I'm going to take this. So anyway, I just wanted you to know.
Ah, bless your heart. Thanks for letting us know. And I know that's really a difficult thing in one's own mother. Yeah, I know. It was a big thing. For me, it was not too hard because it was quite, you know, several years. My mother gradually got to the point where we knew it was good for her to go. And she was vegan till the end, which was nice, and was pretty coherent and good and all that to the end. And Madeline went through that a few years before me. And it was, you know, that's definitely a huge challenge emotionally, I think. Yeah. And I guess the main thing is to, you know, frame it. I mean, however you can frame it. But for me, it's, you know, framing it that the being that she is continues on. And just send her love and appreciation, and whatever has a beginning has an end. That's how it is, you know. But we'll be with you in prayers and sending you our love and to her too, because what a great job she did.
She really did well.
Yeah.
And there is an exception here. You and I are going to live forever. That's the end.
Right, right. That's what this one interview I did recently, the raw foodists, you know, they're really into like just long life and but I don't think it's going to happen.
No. Thanks, Will, so much.
Bless you. Yeah, we love you. We appreciate all your creativity and your songs that keep coming out, and it's fantastic, really.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right. Well, Andy, you have your hand up. Good to see you again here. You have anything
Hi.
You can say? Okay, yeah.
So as Gina was talking about that, I had forgotten about that, and after I saw that first, and did you guys have a second talk about it or just one?
No, we had a first one maybe a few weeks before, maybe a month before, 3 weeks maybe, whatever it was, with Bill and Marlene Tara from the Human Ecology Project in England. We're both on the board.
I was talking about the thing with Silas Rao.
Yeah, so both Silas Rao and I are on the board of advisors for the Human Ecology Project in England. And I wrote an article. I did a video by myself laying out the reasons why I don't think that climate change is as they say, that it's really basically a psyop. And so Bill and Marlene emailed me and said, wow, you know, that's so interesting, you know, because you think that, and Silas Rao is also on our board of advisors, and he thinks the opposite. Why don't we have a discussion? And so I said, all right. You know, Silas said, all right. So we had a discussion, and it was kind of similar. I mean, I spoke for he went first. We always just flip a coin. He always gets going first. So he went first, I went second, and then we had a similar kind of exchange for a while, and then we stopped. And but Peter, we had even before that, we had talked about doing one with Peter and Claire, and so that was the one that was a little bit more promoted and publicized. It was the second one, which was
that's recently. The one I saw. So you're calling that the second one?
That is the second one. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I guess because Claire was saying we should do a follow up with the questions, so I thought that was.
We never did that. Yeah.
That's,
that would have been the third one, but we haven't done that.
I might have said this to you already, but so regarding both sides, whether people believe in climate change and the arguments for and against that, or they don't, I don't understand either side. So, but I don't care. So what I'm looking at is, what are the results of if people believe in climate change or if they don't? And if they believe in climate change, what they're going to do to everyone.
Right.
What they believe in climate change. If they don't believe in climate change, then we're going to be allowed to be free people.
Right.
So I would love to see you guys have a discussion that doesn't even include any science or any belief in climate change or not, but what are the results of how will society change based on you believe in climate change or you don't? And then also looking at the billionaire corporations who have the power to make things change like that, what are there to also be looking at who benefits from believing this way and who benefits from believing the opposite? And the billionaire corporations are the ones that benefit, and big pharma, they all benefit from believing in climate change. And then also looking at, so this is the weird thing, though, is, you know, because all of these people that believe in climate change, a lot of them are tending to go a little bit more accepting of the vegan thing. So that's what's a little crazy is I want to go for whatever's better for the animals. So I'm lost on that one, but I would love to see you and Silas have some sort of conversation, because does he even know what's going on with the 15-minute cities, how they're like, I went to a city council meeting last night just for my little city of Encinitas, and there were a bunch of people there, and I spoke up. You know, you just get 2 minutes. And before I got to speak, there's this police guy noting all these things that what he's been dealing with, and he announced, he says, and yeah, I was able to, I can't remember if he ticketed or arrested or whatever, 10 people that were found sleeping in their vehicles. And I just, when I came up there and spoke, I just, let's put it, I wasn't very calm, let's put it that way. It's like, you're bragging about harassing people that are sleeping, that are not harming anyone, and you're stealing our tax dollars to do it. Anyway, so.
Good for you.
Things like this that. Does Silas have any clue what's going on because people believe in the climate change? This smart city, what they're doing, you know, a lot of these freedom people are promoting, oh, we have our guns. Your guns won't do a thing in the smart city. You know, there won't be cops stopping you. There's going to be the roundabouts and the curbs and the poles. And, you know, unless you're going to come in there with some sort of big machine-powered truck to, you know, wipe out all of this whole design they've done. Anyway, so do you think you guys that Silas might be open to doing that, or would you having a, sorry, I'm going off on a thousand.
Well, I think, yeah, I understand what you're saying. You know, I brought it up in both times. I think I brought it up, maybe had a little more time to bring it up in the first one that we did. But he definitely doesn't respond to that at all in any way. And I think that's similar to a lot of people, a lot of sort of mainstream vegans, say, vegans or non-vegans, they when they hear that about the 15-minute cities and how they're taking, because that's the main point I try to make, is that when we decided to imprison, you know, exploit cows and sheep and goats and then chickens and pigs and all these animals and use them for food and exploit them, what was the main thing we did? Was we took away their freedom of movement, right? When they're free living, they have freedom of movement. That's like the essence of freedom. When you take away someone's freedom of movement, that's putting them in a jail, in a prison. And that's like the worst thing you can do. When you can't, people can't go anywhere, then they're slaves. You've taken away their fundamental things. So the whole idea with climate change is it provides the perfect pretext for taking away our freedom of movement, which is the fundamental freedom, as fundamental as freedom of speech. If you don't have freedom of speech or freedom of movement, that's it. And so I made the point that we need to really be very vigilant and not let that happen. But I saw, like, in the comments and questions, people said, well, what's wrong with 15-minute cities? I think that's a good idea. It saves energy. It reduces climate change. It's helpful. It's good. What's wrong with that? I mean, people shouldn't drive. They shouldn't fly. They shouldn't drive all over the place. It pollutes everything. It's not a good idea. And so I think, you know, people have – and that's the goal through the media and through this whole alarmism, is to get human beings to be willing to self-imprison, right? Because cows and pigs and chickens, you can just imprison them. You can dominate them and imprison them, and they can't really resist. But human beings, to imprison other human beings, you've got to get them to be willing to do it. Otherwise, it's probably not going to work. They're going to fight back. They're going to be creative. They're going to resist. And so I think it's manufacturing our consent to do that, and using this massive propaganda campaign. I also said that it's $1 trillion a year is spent on the propaganda, on the research, on developing alternative energies and all these things. And he said, no, that's not true. That's ridiculous. And again, it's the Small Business Administration, that's a U.S. government agency. They estimate that. So, in any event, it's a massive amount of spending that is done in order to condition us, and it's been going on now for 20 years. So the problem is that we see that, he's also vaccinated, right? I mean, that's the whole thing. I mean, it all kind of goes together. The people that when I said that scientists are not necessarily telling us the truth, they can be corrupted, or the organizations can be corrupted. Again, he said, no, scientists are not, they're not bad people. They're not corrupt. They do their best. They do their work. They make models. Models can be useful. I'm thinking, yeah, models can be really useful. You can use them to imprison people. You make a model. You know, you can make a model. I mean, these models, anybody can, they can make any kind of model they want to make.
What does he think about the whole science of trillions every year of animals they experiment on? I mean, that's science.
See, that's the thing.
That was my introduction.
He would agree. I think the nice thing is, I mean, in some level, he agrees that there is deception going on, but he thinks it's very minor, and it's just what they're doing is they're blaming it on petroleum instead of blaming it on animal agriculture, the climate change. So he wants to get them to blame it on animal agriculture, and then we can really get everybody to go vegan for climate change. And so that's his whole thrust. And he's got a community. And because I remember when I talked to him about it before we did any of this, I said, Silas, I said, the best thing would be if we could have this conversation, and at the end we could both agree that we should go forward, and instead of saying there's 13 reasons to go vegan, we can say there's 12 reasons. You know, it's a 12-alarm fire instead of a 13-alarm fire. It's no big deal. Just drop the climate change. It's already, you say, even he says it's, you know, there's 7 major boundaries, and it's like the third or fourth. It's not even that, not the first one. I said, just let it go. You know, wouldn't that be great? And then we can just really focus and not have this, you know, all this division. And he refused. He said, you know, I talked to my team, and they say that this is where the oxygen is. It's climate change is what people are talking about. It would be silly for us to give that up. We're going to use it. And so that's like, again, expediency. Like, this is what people think. That even though it's a lie, they believe it, so we're going to use it. it's the ends justify the means thing, you know. And to me, veganism is not ends justify the means. So I told him I didn't think that was a good idea, but, you know, that's what he wants to do. So there is a lot riding on this. I think there's a lot of energy. And I think, you know, it's like the United Nations. You know, most people think the United Nations is this wonderful organization that is working for peace, to feed everybody, to help women, to help children. You know, they think it's this great thing. And so he keeps quoting the 17 sustainability goals. And he says, out of those 17, 16 are great. We just have to change one of them. And I'm thinking, every single one of those sustainable development goals, if you look at them, they have one overriding purpose, and that is to centralize power in the hands of a few gigantic financial institutions and corporations and take away any local governance or any chance we have to defend ourselves. That's really what it's about. It's It's very seductive, the whole thing. And I don't think he's a plant. Maybe he is. I mean, some people think he is. Some people think, you know, he's actually a plant. You know, he's actually trying to destroy our movement. I don't think so, but he does seem to be just not budging on this for some reason. So I don't know if it's a good idea to continue to myself with him. I think I'm just going to do some on my own. And then if people, you know, I'll invite anyone, people that believe in climate change, and you know, ask me any question. I'm happy to talk to people. I love it, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I'm happy to answer anyone. And I would, and I agree with you. We need to really bring up this underlying reason that everything about this just moves us. It doesn't save the environment. I mean, I've been reading articles lately about windmills, for example, and how they're just killing so many birds and bats, and how they destroy the soil and the vibration. It's just, and then they're really environmentally devastating, and they have to be replaced every like 15 years. It's a nightmare for the environment. A lot of these things are, and people don't realize that. I think they think, oh, it's green, it's green, green, green. And I had a whole experience with that back in the 1980s. I remember back in the 80s, I was teaching college, and I remember I did this whole thing on the Green Revolution. And the Green Revolution was, everybody was talking about how great it was. We have a Green Revolution, we can feed everyone. And I was telling my students back then, this is a hoax. The Green Revolution is all it is these big oil companies, chemical companies, pharmaceutical companies, and the bankers in the background going into Africa and Asia and South America and basically coming in with their hybridized crops before, there was before genetic engineering, but hybridized crops that require a lot of petroleum, fertilizer, and they're just getting these farmers to go into debt, and they're making the loans, and they're just enslaving the people under the Green Revolution. So I've known for 40 years, be careful when you hear green. You better be careful. But again, I don't think most people don't have that background. So they just think, oh, green is great, and it's much better than this, and believe the propaganda. So you're a rare person who sees through the whole thing. But to get people to see through this, that's the tricky part. Thing, and I'm happy to do my best.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Thank you. I appreciate it so much.
All right. Thanks for your good comment. Very good comment. Really appreciate it. Christy, it's good to see you.
Hey,
you're not unmuted. Okay, there we go. Yeah.
Good to see you too, and good to see everybody. And just a couple of comments in several different directions, so feel free to reply to whichever seems most relevant. But regarding Stylesh, yeah, Joanne Farb had put me in touch with him to have on my podcast, The Vegan Posse. And when I had my interview with him, I was so impressed with him. I mean, he's clearly so smart and, you know, such an ardent vegan, and spoke so touchingly about his granddaughter who he made this promise to.
The pinky promise, right, yeah.
Yeah. My impression of him is that, like you said, he's still very mainstream, and fundamentally, you know, that like divergence between the people who still generally believe in the system and people who just completely don't, you know. And I was never a huge believer in the system, but boy, did COVID, the scandemic, seal that deal.
Right.
What you were saying about restricting freedom of movement and, you know, getting people to imprison themselves, that was COVID. I remember early on, before I even, you know, had formed a really solid view of what was happening, I remember seeing a sign on my neighbor's lawn that said, let's just stay home. And I just, you know, and I almost never do anything on social media, but I did post a picture of that sign and said, let's just give up all our, you know, constitutional rights while we're at it. And, you know, boy, did it just proceed, just exponentially. regarding climate change, like Andy, I appreciate you saying that you don't understand it. I feel like I understand some bits and pieces, but ultimately, like, if I'm completely honest, no, I don't really understand it. However, where it gets messy for me is, like you guys were all getting at, I certainly can see the implications of believing in climate change, the troubling things that line of reasoning or perspective can lead to. However, I definitely believe that we humans are doing a lot of horrible steps to the planet. And I don't think that our planet and wildlife and everything on the planet is just fine and dandy. And I don't believe that drilling for oil is harmless and innocuous. Part of that comes from some of the legal cases that I've been, you know, tangentially involved in, where I've seen, you know, internal documents, and, you know, they're trying to hide all kinds of stuff from the public in terms of the effects of drilling for oil, and also not just oil, but natural gas and fracking and all of that. So that's where it gets messy for me. I can believe and even, you know, strongly suspect that climate change is a hoax. It's all a psyop to get us in a certain direction. But that doesn't mean the environment is just fine and dandy, and that oil companies are great and drill baby drill is the way to go. And so that's where it gets very messy and confusing for me. So I almost, regarding those, the 13 alarm fire, the 12 alarm fire, I almost feel like we can leave environments, you know, as one of the alarms, but just not climate change. But then that's super confusing. How do you message that? Like, are we still the way RFK Jr., you know, I have, I'm of mixed minds about RFK Jr., but the way he puts it is that, you know, the green movement, the climate change movement has co-opted the actual environmental movement.
Yeah.
And, you know, I can believe that. But again, that gets super confusing to try to convey to people, like, oh, you do need to worry about the environment, but not about this part of what's happening in the environment. So, yeah, I just appreciate your take on any
so
of that.
That's a really good question. So basically, the environmental movement really started in the United States and really kind of worldwide with Rachel Carson's book Silent Spring back in the early 1960s, where she sounded the alarm about DDT and all the poisoning that was killing off all the wildlife and hurting us, causing cancer and everything. And so that started the EPA, you know, and this whole thing of lawsuits against corporations. And so these corporations, they got together and they realized that they had to switch the blame, like who they're blaming, away from them. And so this was done very systematically. Maurice Strong, I mean, there's quite a good documentation on this. There was the founder of Fiat, a very wealthy guy, and another wealthy European got together, and they started the Club of Rome, and they published The Limits to Growth, and they were basically saying the problem is humans, right? We're kind of like what you're saying, and it's true. I mean, in many ways, like, there's just too many people burning too much fuel, cutting down too many trees, just, you know, polluting the world. We've got to shrink. We can't grow so much. It's like we're like a cancer on the earth. We've got to reduce all of that. And they brought Maurice Strong on. He was a Canadian oil man. And then David Rockefeller got involved, and Rockefeller, and then all these super rich people that really kind of run things. They all got right behind it. And then they had the summit, the big Earth Summit in Rio back in 1992. Where we say, you know, we really need to limit growth. We have to, it's too much. And then that led, and they started planting the seeds back then of climate change, slowly, like global warming it was back then, global warming. And then when Al Gore came with his big thing, 2006, with an Inconvenient Truth, and it just kind of took off and had huge amount of money behind it because they had it all planned out. But it's pretty obvious to see that now the environmental movement is not is barely suing any companies, I mean, for environmental devastation. It's all focused on climate change, which is not their fault. That's my fault, right? I'm driving too much. I'm flying too much. It's our fault. It's not their fault. And so the environmental movement really was, I think, successfully by this ploy of climate change, the whole attention went away from the corporations and what they were doing to poison, all these poisons. And then the other thing that they did was viruses, right? Inventing viruses. I mean, really putting everything, like when people get sick, and I have a lot of this in Food for Freedom, like the Zika virus, you know, these kids are being born with shrunken heads in South America, and they try to figure it out. And local researchers figured out what it was. It was a subsidiary of Monsanto had a larvicide that they were spraying all over the place, and it was toxic, and so women were drinking water that had that in it, and then when they were pregnant, and then their babies all had microencephalopathy, and so they were going to sue this Monsanto subsidiary for poisoning everybody. Then they had scientists come in from the CDC and the WHO, and they said, oh, and actually, that's not true. There's a virus, and it's the Zika virus, and that's what's causing this, so we just need to vaccinate everybody, and it'll all be fine. And this pattern, so it's climate change and viruses, vaccinations and climate change, the United Nations spokesperson said it very clearly about 3 years ago or 4 years ago. She said there's two things that we should not allow any misinformation about, and that's vaccines and climate change. So it was to, I think, shift the blame away. But if you look carefully, it's not that hard for people to understand, I don't think, to see that everybody's talking about climate change all the time, like that's the thing, but that really allows these corporations to spew 80,000 toxic chemicals and cause cancer, and chronic disease has gone from 6% when I was a kid up to 70% from all these toxic chemicals and all the vaccinations. It's pretty obvious to see if someone has any inkling at all to kind of look and think about this, and then to understand that I have these graphs actually in my presentation that if people think that this whole thing of climate change was to sort of reduce the amount of petroleum and coal and fossil fuels and switch over to renewable energy, then after spending trillions of dollars doing that for 20 years, we should see some results, right? Well, if you look at the Department of Energy statistics, and I have a pie chart that shows it very clearly, the amount in 1985 and comparing to 2024, that's like 40 years of work, right, to get more renewable energy, and it didn't change. We have, back then, it was 11% was renewable energy, and 85% was fossil fuels and petroleum. And now, in 2024, it went from 11% renewable down to 8% renewable, wind and solar. And fossil fuels stayed the same, still like 86%, and the difference, the 4% difference, was made up by nuclear increasing. So clearly the oil companies, they could care less, because it takes enormous amounts of petroleum to build, to mine all these battery stuff and make windmills and do all this infrastructure. I mean, they're burning more petroleum. It doesn't hurt them at all. And in a way, it doesn't matter, because it's not the corporations, it's the financial institutions in the background, BlackRock and Vanguard and State Street, the people, they own the solar, they own the petroleum, they own the windmills, they own everything. They own the batteries. It doesn't matter. You get switched to one or the other, they're going to make their money. And they're the ones that are actually running things. And behind all this, these bankers, they have so much wealth. And then wealth buys everything. It buys the politicians, it buys the corporations, it buys the media, it buys the Hollywood movies, it buys the universities, the education. Kids are going through school, and from first grade on, they're learning about climate change like it's a reality. And so it's all created. I don't think people should have that hard of a time to figure out these things. But the other thing that I think is important, because I totally agree, we should minimize our environmental footprint as individuals and collectively. And we can, that's something for us to do. And one of the things that's, you know, is interesting, I think, is that there's been, I think, a tremendous overuse of petroleum, actually. That, like, there's a guy, this is something that I've been exploring on my own, but I have to do a little more work on it. But the carburetors, for example, in automobiles, have a, there's a, something called fuel-air, the fuel-to-air mixture. And you can have it either rich or lean, right? So if you, if it's more lean, it's more air and less fuel. If it's more rich, it's more fuel and less air. And so there's these people that, you know, that are mechanics, and they're kind of creative mechanics, and they're able to take pretty much any vehicle, like a Chevrolet or a Ford or whatever, from 1986 to 2000, whatever, any of these cars, and they can just tinker with that fuel air ratio and get that car to have 100 to 150 miles per the gallon. They can do that. They, all the cars could be running on massively less fuel, and when you have, because it burns hotter and cleaner when there's more air, you have to adjust a few other things when you do it. So you can't just do that one thing, but it can be done. It's not that difficult. And these engineers, these companies, it's like amazing to me, because I even talked to this guy, he's from Canada, about it, and he said he's done it, and he's, there's people that'll do it, and I think we're being manipulated to burn a lot more petroleum, because when you have a rich mixture, it makes a lot of pollution. Sulfur dioxide is spewing out into the atmosphere from burning fossil fuels, and it's causing lung cancer. I mean, it's not a good thing. So we should be using less. But there is something to be looked at, like we could use a lot less. And then there's a lot of other research that shows that there are much healthier forms of energy that have been suppressed. And so I think we have to keep an open mind about all these things and realize that we're being manipulated and lied to on many different levels to keep an agenda going, and to take to make it, us think that, you know, we're the problem. And I know we're the problem for eating animal foods. I mean, that for sure. But I think the amount of, as far as climate change goes, there isn't anything that petroleum does. But petroleum does create sulfur dioxide, which is not a good thing. I mean, it isn't. And there can be oil spills. I mean, there are bad things for sure about petroleum. I'm not in favor of, like, more petroleum, but it's nothing to do with climate. It's got nothing to do with climate. It doesn't affect climate. That's clear. It's minimal. If you look at the, you know, just read my, I just wrote an article. I mean, you can read my new article. It's called The Seven Deadly PSYOPs, and the seventh one is climate change. And I even have the graphs in there. It's on my website. If you just go to recent essays and click on the most recent essay, it's right there. You can read through the seven deadly PSYOPs, and I explain it there too. So I think I don't think it should be that hard for people to understand these things, really. It's not that complicated. It's pretty straightforward when you see the way that we've been you know, lied to about all these other things. But I know what you're saying also, that there are some people who will just say, oh, it's all it's just a conspiracy theory. I believe the BBC and NBC and CBS and NPR. And so those people, you're right, you probably, it might not be possible to reach them. I don't know. That's I hope that helped a little bit. Is that? All right. Let's see, how are we doing? We have another 10 minutes. If anybody has any comment or question about anything we've been talking about, we've kind of been focusing on this whole thing. But I think it's healthy because it is something our whole society really is struggling with. And I think also the vegan movement I think we're losing our status by promoting vaccines, promoting climate change, promoting unhealthy vegan foods. I think veganism, among a lot of people, is becoming a laughing stock. I mean, somebody posted something the other day There was some vegans that were protesting against a, I don't know if you saw this, but they were protesting against a Starbucks that was charging 80 cents more for the non-dairy milk than the dairy milk. And so they were out there protesting, and what they did, and they were with PETA, I guess. And so what they did was they filled up these plastic tubs with cement, and they stood in them until the cement hardened. And then so they wouldn't move. And it was and it was on Twitter, and there was like literally thousands of people laughing at vegans for being so stupid that they let their feet get hardened into cement so they couldn't move. And they said, just let them stand there till they start peeing and pooping right in their own pants. You know, let them just stand there. And of course, they had to be rescued by the police and picked up and taken away and used jackhammers to get their feet out of the cement. And it was nothing but a complete stupid fiasco. And I mean, it's those kind of things that people just love making fun of stupid vegans doing stupid things. Who am I? 80 cents? You're going to do all that for 80 cents for a, you know, $5 thing or whatever. So I guess the point I'm making is we should really.
And that was in Nashville. I just looked it up. It says that was in Nashville.
Oh, really? Well, the one I saw said it was in Detroit, but maybe it happened in several places. I don't know. But I guess the point is we should really just focus on things we know are true. And we can see it's true that animal agriculture is devastating to rainforests and oceans and ecosystems in general, into, you know, soil erosion and water depletion, all these things. It's very clear. It's well documented. Climate change is like, who knows? It's just a total debate. It's so debatable. And when you look into it deeply, you can see it's not even debatable. But focus on things we know are true. That it's compassion for the animals, right? I mean, that's clear. And not do these things that just make people laugh at us for being silly. I think that's the main point. So, Aradhana, you had your hand up, and we're getting close to ending here. So good to see you. Are you out here in California?
I am. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Wow.
And that's good to see you and everybody too. I noticed Kenny's comment in the chat, and that's why I wanted to raise my hand. I noticed, Kenny, you lowered your hand, but the Zoe Rosenberg trial is happening right now, and I don't have a lot to say. I attended one day and then a couple of the other adjunct events, but it sounds like Kenny's been going a lot, and so I'm going to lower my hand and turn my audio off and hear what Kenny and or anybody else if no, Dr. Oh,
okay. Yeah, I think, yeah, thanks for bringing that up. Thanks, Kenny, also. Yeah, we've known Zoe for many years. I knew her when she was only like 8 years old. And her mother is a veterinarian. They live down in San Luis Obispo. And we put on quite a few events together over the years, back in the day, back in the good old days before COVID. And she's grown up, and she's, you know, a real animal rights activist. And that happens a lot with people who have sanctuaries. You know, when you have a sanctuary, you really, like, see these animals as beings, as people, and become very motivated to try to save their lives. And so, bless her heart, she's, you know, she's been arrested for stealing property, and it's now a pretty big trial. And as I understand it, the prosecution is already finished, and it's going on. And it's getting some, I think, good press. People are really kind of hearing about this. It may be helpful. I don't know. In the big picture, you know, I don't know if meat eaters will see anything out of this at all. But it may, you know, it plants a seed, I think, in some ways. I think it's, you know, it's a lot of stress on her and stress on people. And, you know, it's one of the ways to go about making change is to do open rescues. And we know the woman who started the open rescues too, Patty Marks in Australia. And she's been to jail so many times, and you know, she does it for the animals, and she has a sanctuary also. So I think it could be a helpful thing. We'll see how it turns out and see what the judge says and all that. But in general, it's forcing people to look at the fact that these living beings are merely property, and to just question that. We know they're beings. If we have a companion animals, we know that. And so I think it's a great thing. Gino, you have your hand up again.
Yeah, real quick about Zoe. And, you know, I haven't known her since she was 8, but maybe about 13 or 14. Uh-huh. She was often at DXE events up in the Bay Area. And she's been a trooper since she was a kid, very advanced for her age. Now she's full-fledged. And this trial, she gives her own summary each day. You can see it on Instagram. And it's very quick, yet it really hits all the hot points of what happened that day. And now I've seen enough of these, you know, with Wayne Chung and other activists, where it seems to be the same script all the time with the prosecution.
Uh-huh.
You know, and of course in other kinds of trials too, where, you know, if a person is really innocent, the prosecution will tell all kinds of lies and try to manipulate your viewpoint, your sensibilities, to think that this person is guilty as charged, there's no doubt about it. And now this young woman saved four chickens that were very ill and took them to the vet. That's a sin? Come on.
Right,
you know?
Right.
It's yeah. just so wrong. Now, there have been some trials in the recent past where the prosecution dropped everything because right. it made them look ridiculous that they were charging this activist with what they did.
Right, right, right.
This
yeah.
time, I think they want to go the full length, and hopefully Zoe will be okay. I mean, she wore a monitor on her ankle for, 2 years or something? It was ridiculous.
Right. Yeah. No,
so
you're right.
Everybody give Zoe your full support if you can.
Right. Thank you. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I know it is ridiculous what they try to do. And I think you're right. A lot of times they just want to drop the charges and just keep the publicity down so people don't think about it. So they're taking a risk by prosecuting her, I think, and trying to make an example. And hopefully it backfires.
Yeah,
good point. All right. Well, any last things? We ended at 15 minutes past is the time we like to wrap it up by. So are there any last minute thoughts or questions? If not, I just want to encourage everyone to have a look, please, at our resources that I put up on the website. And there's a lot here. My new essay has a link for that, The 7 Deadly Psyops. The interview I did with Ms. Fit Vegan, why Dr. Will Tuttle has not had a blood test in over 50 years and doesn't take any supplements. So that was actually a fun one. There's a whole movement now to kind of question taking supplements, which I think is a good idea. Most of these supplements come out of some kind of drug company, and they're probably not very healthy. And then there's links to the Silas Rao. This one, Real Men Eat Plants, that's the one we did. Lisa helped with that. Another one in India, a really neat lady. We met her in India, and it's Veganosaurus. We did an interview with her. And then Marley, our good friend Marlene Yarrow, she's a World Peace Diet facilitator, so we discussed on her thing that. And Madeline also. Madeline has a new kitchen video, Pumpkin Lasagna, which is up, and there's going to be another one coming soon. She's making pomegranate juice. We have a bunch of pomegranates. And then some other really good articles, How America Learned to Pretend That Obesity is Normal. This is really amazing what's been happening. And also Beyond Meat, I don't know if you've noticed, but that company, which was really flying high before COVID, and now it looks like it is probably going out of business. It looks like they have no hope at all. And it's very interesting how it just collapsed. And I think, again, it's part of the thing of vegans doing things they shouldn't be doing, really. So anyway, there's some good articles here. The North Dakota Mega Dairy, Wind Farms Wreaking Havoc on Birds. And then lots of other resources. If you're interested, you can check them out. And so I want to thank all of you for joining us, and maybe we can unmute ourselves and have our closing prayer. Judy Carman, who's one of our dear friends and co-founded the Circle of Compassion with us, where we have the prayer circle for animals, and we say our prayer. She's at the this weekend. She's there now. It started already. The the big gathering at Unity Village, the vegan done by Carol Saunders. I forget what it's called, but it's a spirituality. I spoke at it a few years ago. And so that's this weekend. So we're missing a few people because of that. But we send them our love. Yeah, I hope I got through everything. If not, we can do it next time. So, Madeline, are you coming?
Yeah.
All right. So, yeah, so let's unmute, please. And thanks again, everyone, for your wonderful input, all your efforts on behalf of animals. And let's say our prayer together. Begins with the words compassion in circles. Here we go.
Compassion circles everywhere.
One more time. Compassion circles everywhere. Thank you, everyone. And we're leaving on November 21st on our tour, on our 5 months in our little microvan. And our first one will be in San Jose at the Vegetarian House. On Friday night, the 21st. On the 20th is the third Thursday, so we'll see you all then, and then we take off. We won't be with the piano for 5 months, but we'll have fun anyway. All right, so much love. We'll see you next time. Bless you all. Thank you.
All right.
Bye. Bless you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Bye.